La Jolla, California, UC San Diego Athletics presents TritonCast, the podcast for the UC San Diego Tritons. Here are your hosts, Jeff Toriel and Jenny Stevens.
Welcome to the second episode of TritonCast, the official podcast for UC San Diego Athletics. Thanks for joining us.
In today's Triton Spotlight, UC San Diego Sports Dietetics Coordinator Jasmine Chu joins us, and she'll tell us about how she teaches Triton Scholar athletes the key components of nutrition so they can fuel themselves for competition. Jasmine also chats with us about how she's using social media to continue educating Scholar athletes remotely during the summertime.
But first, let's go around campus. Division One is officially here. On July 1st, the UC San Diego Athletics Department made the jump. With the majority of the teams competing in the Big West, make sure that you check out the Welcome to the Big West series on the website, ucsdtritons.com. Also, give us a follow on social media at ucsdtritons for the latest content, including Junior Triton Club content for the little ones.
But now, let's move on to our Triton Spotlight. This is our conversation with UC San Diego Sports Dietetics Coordinator, Jasmine Chu.
So tell us, Jasmine, how did you first become interested in nutrition?
I first became interested in nutrition after taking a GE course in my freshman year of college and undergraduate. It was, I think, just a general science requirement that I had. And I had some friends that were taking a class in the physiological science department called diet and exercise. And I remember the professor was kind of a very confident type of guy. And I remember him on the first day of class saying how his class was going to change our lives. You know, it was going to be that impactful. And thinking at the time, you know, this guy is kind of full of himself, you know, that's ridiculous. And it's funny because it really did. And it started with just little habits that I started to change in my everyday life. So, for example, you know, learning about whole grains and natural sources of dietary sugar versus added sugars, and just, you know, making the switch from white rice to brown rice and white bread to wheat bread and those sorts of things just got me kind of more and more interested. The more I learned, the more I wanted to learn. And so it was really something that I just took on more as like a hobby of just kind of improving my own habits first. And then after working a few years in another field, I worked in environmental management and kind of environmental conservation. And I ended up at a desk job that I didn't really love. And that kind of made me think a little bit more about nutrition and potentially pursuing that as a career path. And so that's kind of how it all started and how I got to where I am now.
So once you decided that you wanted to pursue nutrition as a career path, how did you pursue it?
So the path you take, I think for most people, they take a, you know, nutrition course in undergrad, and then they decide, okay, I'm going to major in a nutrition type of major. Not all universities have it, which is the challenge. So, for example, I went to UCLA for grad and not have an undergraduate nutrition major. And, so that made it a little challenging for me because I went down a completely different path. But for the normal route that you take is to complete a bachelor's degree in nutrition or dietetics. And then you have to complete, as part of that coursework, you have to complete what they call a DPD, a didactic program in dietetics, which kind of just is your certificate to then go on to the next step, which is to complete a dietetic internship. And then once you complete that dietetic internship, you then have to sit for the board exam. And once you pass the board exam, then that's how you get to become a registration.
So what was next for you after the board exam? Where'd you go from there?
After the board exam, what did I do? I actually already had a job lined up before I had passed my board exam. So nothing really changed for me after I took it because I had already had my job.
I understand at one point you started working for USA Volleyball. How did that position come about?
I started interning with them, I want to say the summer of 2013. My husband actually played on the national team for quite a few years. And so that's how I first found out even about the job of a sports dietitian. I didn't know that was something that existed, but his team had one. And so I was able to meet her and kind of pick her brain. And that's when I really decided, okay, this is what I want to do. This is the new career path that I want to take. And so I worked with them pretty much summer from then on through the 2016 Olympics. And, you know, I've kept in touch with so many of the staff that I met through that position. And it was a really impactful and experience, you know, impactful experience that I'm really thankful for.
What sort of things were you doing with USA Volleyball as their dietitian?
Let's see. They do catered meals for their athletes there. So that was part of the job of, you know, making the catering orders and getting that all set up, testing recipes or making suggestions to kind of modify the existing recipes from either the caterers or the chef. Some education in the form of team talks, meeting with individual athletes who had, you know, specific challenges, maybe recovering from an injury, for example. We often did hydration testing, especially their training facility is up in Anaheim, and during the summer it gets really, really hot. So we would do hydration testing once in a while just to, you know, serve as a reminder and kind of gauge everyone's hydration status. We also would do body composition testing just to track where athletes were. So for some, it might just be once a year, and other ones that were maybe working on making specific changes more frequently to assess their progress. At times, we'd also have some youth groups come through. So we might do some, you know, team education sessions with them. Oh, what else? Those athletes would always get blood work done usually about once a summer, and then follow-ups for anyone that had identified issues. So going through all of the blood work results and finding which athletes were deficient and needed supplementation recommendations or maybe diet recommendations to improve their specific nutrient levels. Is another thing that we worked on. Some of it was food prep as well, because we provide different sorts of snacks during practice and post-workout snacks. A lot of times these athletes had pretty quick turnarounds from either weightlifting sessions into training sessions or vice versa, training sessions into weightlifting sessions. So we'd make smoothies or little protein balls or little protein shots or all sorts of different little things just to help with their recovery and with their performance.
I know you'd mentioned earlier that you were with them during their time in the Olympics. So Was there any sort of specific thing that you did as far as nutrition to get them ready for that?
Yeah, so at the Olympics, the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee typically set up quite a few little satellite training facilities, because I think at one point they realized that in certain cities that the venues might be really, really spread out. So for example, I know in London, they had quite a few of these. In Rio, we had, I think, 4 to 5 of these remote training sites. And so one that I was at was called the Navy School, and it was somewhat close to the volleyball venue, I think the sailing venue. And so I'm trying to think of what other teams were there, some of our track and field athletes. And so at each of these training centers, they had basically a food cafeteria set up. And so I helped with the kitchen staff there just to, you know, keep that place running, that every once in a while we might get, you know, a busload of a few different teams or a whole bunch of athletes come through. So it was just kind of maintaining all of our food stock for them. And then with specific teams, I helped with same thing, some recovery snacks. So whether it was something for them post-workout or something a little more portable that they could travel with to their venue sites and have it after a training session or after a match.
Had you been to the Olympics before, or was that your first time experiencing it?
I had been to the Olympics before in London in 2012. My husband was on the indoor volleyball team at that one. So I was just there as a spectator. I didn't do anything work related. And then Rio in 2016 was the first time where I got to participate as part of staff and in supporting Team USA.
Okay. So what was next for you then after USA Volleyball?
So after USA Volleyball, I took a little bit of time off from work because I had a baby during that time. And then a little bit into my time off is when the position at UCSD opened up. And I think I first found out about it through the dietitian that I used to work for up at the Anaheim Training Center with the volleyball. And so that's how I found out. And during that off time, I think I just did a little bit of consulting. I didn't have any full-time position because I was mostly home with the new baby.
Yeah. So, I mean, I know that you're a San Diego native originally. Was that part of what appealed to you about the job? Did you see yourself going back to San Diego?
Yes. And I had actually already moved back a little bit after the Olympics. My family's always been here since I grew up here. And we had, I think in 2014 or 2015 is when we built a home here in San Diego. So we always knew that the plan was to eventually settle back down here. And so it was really perfect timing for that job opportunity to present itself.
We're chatting with Jasmine Chu here on this episode of Triton Cast. So Jasmine, how was that transition professionally for you then? I mean, going from working with professionals at the Olympics to college athletes at UC San Diego.
Yeah, so I think at the very basics, sport nutrition is the same regardless of who you're working with. Whether it's youth athletes at the high school level all the way up to Olympic athletes, that the things that you have to have down are the same. You know, you have to eat well to recover. You have to stay hydrated. None of that changes. I think the main difference is probably the resources that are available at each of the different levels. So, for example, when you're working with professional athletes, you know, whether it's a professional sports team or a national team, you typically do not struggle as much with, you know, having enough funding to provide everything that you want to provide. And I think we're lucky at UC San Diego, where I feel like our scholar athletes have a lot more compared to what I've seen at other universities. So I would say there, it wasn't a huge difference. Maybe one thing that was something that I had to adjust to was just the number of athletes that I was supporting. So, you know, for example, up at USA Volleyball, we wouldn't probably have, oh, I don't know, maybe 30 to 40 athletes on the men's side and on the women's side, maybe a little bit less even. So maybe, you know, we'll just say 60 athletes total at a time. And that would fluctuate depending on which teams were training in the gym or not. But, you know, coming to UC San Diego, all of a sudden the athletics department is between 500 and 600 scholar athletes. So just adjusting to that volume is probably the biggest thing. And I think trying to identify how to make the most impact on that larger number of people is something that I had to really think about.
With such a large number of scholar athletes at UC San Diego, how do you make nutrition an individualized thing, since every scholar athlete is so different?
You know, it starts team-wide. Well, like I said before, you know, the needs for everyone in general are the same. And where it comes to be a bit more individualized is when they come to me on their own. So for individual consultation sessions, and that's where we can really take those general recommendations and fine tune them a bit more so that we can make sure that, you know, we include foods that this particular scholar athlete likes or doesn't, you know, likes, and we exclude the ones that they don't like, or, you know, we can make more individualized calculations on maybe what their individual energy or individual protein or individual carbohydrate needs might be. And we can, you know, fine tune some of those fluid recommendations. So it's really more about, just taking those general recommendations and adjusting them a little bit so that they're very specific to an individual scholar athlete. And I don't do this for everyone, because that would be impossible to put that level of detail into the, you know, all 600 individuals. So it's really, you know, just for those individuals that want to come in on their own and work on that themselves.
Right. So, I mean, in general, then you're typically working with the teams. Is that kind of what your day is mostly comprised of, sitting down with the teams and discussing the nutrition with them? Or what's your typical day like?
Yeah. So when we're on campus, I would say there is not a typical day, because it can really vary. Sometimes it might be stocking the fueling station and doing the food ordering on the days where those deliveries come, or some other days it will be, like you said, doing team talks and team education sessions. We try to focus on incorporating hydration testing, especially in the summer when it's a bit hotter. This past summer as well, during the preseason period, we were providing meals for all of our fall sport scholar athletes. And so that was something new that we hadn't really done to that extent before. So I would say, depending on what day you catch me, it could be a variety of different things that I might be busy doing.
When you're planning and ordering these meals for the scholar athletes, what sort of things are you looking for in order to get them the most nutritious meal possible?
I would say the first thing that I think about is protein. It plays such an important role in helping scholar athletes, they're helping their muscles to recover from the wear and tear and the heavy beating that bodies take during these heavy training periods. So that's really the focus. And then I'll think about building the rest of the meal around there. So typically, you know, the protein source is the priority. And then the next two things that we consider would be getting some sort of grain in. Maybe it's pasta, maybe it's brown rice, maybe it's quinoa. And then making sure that we've got some veggies in there as well. I always think of the fruits and veggies as the color of the meal. And so making sure that you've got some color in there, because of the role that all of those different phytonutrients and, you know, those vitamins and minerals that these plant foods bring, they really help scholar athletes and in their recovery process as well. And so that's really the basic template of building a meal for them. It's getting a protein, thinking about what the grain sources will be, and then making sure that we've got some veggies in there as well.
And is that sort of the plate composition that you encourage them to eat on their own, just in their everyday life when they're going to classes? Or is that more of a workout day sort of meal for them?
Yep, that is definitely what is encouraged to them. So we have something that we refer to called the athlete plates, where it's basically just a template showing what proportion of these different food categories. So what proportion of your plate should come from protein, what portion should come from carbs, and what portion should come from veggies. And we teach the scholar athletes that depending on the level of difficulty, so whether it's an easy day, a moderate training day, or a hard day, that really dictates what those plates should look like on those days. And it teaches them to really adjust their food intake depending on what their needs will be, and that's determined by the level and kind of intensity of their trainings for the day.
So have the scholar athletes ever talked to you much about how easy it is for them to compose these nutritious plates on their own with the resources that they've got on campus and the different eating spots that they have?
I think from what I've heard from them, you know, in individual meetings and just at team talks, that it's not too difficult. As soon as once they get down the basic education of, you know, what foods fall into those categories. So, you know, what foods are considered protein sources, what foods are considered carb sources, and, you know, veggies are pretty obvious. That doesn't need too much explanation. But, you know, once they figure out, okay, is this food choice in the dining hall or in the grocery store a carb? Is it a protein? And once they figure that out, I don't think that it is too difficult for them to put these meals together. I think the challenging part is adjusting those meals. So maybe figuring out the portions that need to be either increased or decreased depending on whether we're aiming for that easy plate or that hard day plate.
Do you find that the scholar athletes are interested in nutrition and having these healthy meals, or is it kind of a struggle to get them to adjust to eating a particular way while they're at college?
I think that it is definitely a mix. So there are for sure a good number of scholar athletes who are very, very interested in nutrition. And they're the ones that ask all of the questions during our team talks. And they're the ones that reach out and want to schedule the one-on-one consultations. And there are also a lot of scholar athletes, I think, that just don't quite recognize the importance yet. I think, you know, all of these scholar athletes are in their late teens to early 20s, and their bodies are very resilient. And oftentimes, just in my own professional experience, I've found that a lot of times athletes won't think too much about nutrition until they have to. And that might mean, you know, they either start older and their bodies change a little bit, and maybe they aren't recovering as well, or maybe they end up with recurrent injuries and they realize that something has to change in their everyday habits to kind of prevent that. And so I wouldn't say that they're, you know, not interested in nutrition. They just haven't recognized how important it is for their own individual well-being.
Yeah, for sure. So when somebody starts out as a freshman versus when they're a senior, does much change for what you recommend to them, or is it still pretty much those basic guidelines throughout their time?
Yeah, I think that's always a challenge for me in making sure that, you know, in these team talks that I make sure the freshmen and the newer incoming students are covered in terms of, you know, getting that basic education, but then having to also make the information new and applicable to the juniors and seniors who come back year after year. Because I don't always get too many sessions with the team. So it might just be, you know, once or twice a year. And so it is a constant challenge for me. I would say the difference from the incoming freshmen to the seniors is really the level of information and education that I'm able to provide. So the focus for the incomers is really just getting the basics down, learning the basics of sport nutrition and how to apply it. And then for the seniors, it might be, you know, they've already got the basics down and looking even further, maybe into specific functional foods or maybe some sports supplements that can really help, you know, improve their recovery or improve their performance because they've already got those basics down.
We're chatting with Jasmine Chu here on this episode of TritonCast. Jasmine, as the sports dietetics coordinator at UC San Diego, what are some of your favorite aspects of the job?
I think one of my favorite aspects of my position is really just getting the opportunity to talk with not just the scholar athletes, but to the coaches and to the various athletic staff and make an impact in that way. I don't think anyone would argue with the fact that nutrition is a really important part of a scholar athlete's life, but for anyone as well. You know, we have to eat every day, multiple times, and knowing how to make the best choices for ourselves and, you know, in now and into the future, and knowing that these decisions impact our health, which is always something that we have to focus on, is really great. So, you know, I love having these conversations with the individual scholar athletes, with the teams, their coaches, and having the chance to kind of help everyone make these changes for the better, you know, for the betterment of not only their sports performance, but for their health, you know, for the rest of their lives is a really great feeling.
You mentioned about working with the coaches at UC San Diego. Since you're not constantly around the scholar athletes, like with one particular team or not maybe with them every day, how are the coaches able to support your mission and help encourage the scholar athletes to stay healthy and eat in a nutritious way?
I try to check in with the coaches a few times a year as a whole. So the coaches typically have, I think, monthly meetings, kind of standing meetings. And so I try to pop in on those meetings every, maybe once a quarter, every few months or so, just to, you know, check in and provide them with a little bit of education on something that might have come up. For example, in the past, we've talked about travel nutrition, or we've talked about recently, you know, how myself and the other dietitian, Nicole, can help support their teams right now while the lockdown is still in place and while everyone is at home, and you know, how we can communicate through Zoom and still focus on helping to improve everyone's nutrition habits. And then a lot of times coaches, I might have conversations with them one-on-one. I would say there are a handful of coaches that are very committed to, you know, helping their team improve their nutrition habits. And I think a lot of times it starts out with themselves. They may have recognized, you know, how important of a role nutrition has played in their own health. And once they recognize that, they then see how valuable it can be to incorporate, you know, the different messages and things that I've been suggesting to their teams and to their individual scholar athletes.
So for this upcoming season, the whole department is making the jump to Division One. Do you feel like your role will be impacted at all, or not necessarily?
I think if anything, that it should continue to grow. Sports nutrition is really it's an exciting time to be in this field right now, because it's definitely growing. I think, you know, just in the mainstream, everyone's recognizing how important nutrition is, and it's definitely translating over into, you know, athletic departments and even high schools at the, you know, at the youth level. Even kids or parents of children are recognizing how important of a role nutrition plays. And so, you know, more and more universities are adding dietitians to their performance or sports med staff. And so I would anticipate that it would just grow and we'd be able to continue providing more support for our scholar athletes, which is great.
So in the summertime, obviously things are a little different without scholar athletes around, no competitions going on. How does that impact what you do?
Right now, I've been really trying to reach out to teams and reach out to coaches to, you know, let them know, because as you said, we're not on campus and I'm not getting that same face-to-face interaction that I might typically get when everyone is on campus. So just been, you know, doing a lot of outreach on that end to make sure that we're still staying connected. We've been trying to do a little bit more on the social media side. So some additional recipes and additional little cooking demos and cooking videos here and there, just to give people ideas, because, you know, I don't know about you, but I know for myself, I'm definitely cooking a lot more than usual during this lockdown period when, you know, you're stuck at home and you don't want to get bored eating the same thing every day. So we figured that a lot of other people are feeling the same way. And we just wanted to give everyone a few more new ideas. And then, you know, we've also been thinking about how the new school year might be different. So just planning out, you know, what's going to have to change in terms of how we provide our services, what might need to change with the different food offerings that we have. And, you know, until we kind of have a band of when everyone will be back and what the specific guidelines might be, we won't know exactly what we're able to do.
right, with between COVID and I mean, with the Division One transition, a lot of things are going to be changing right. this upcoming year. So what are you most looking forward to about the upcoming year?
I'm most looking forward to getting back on campus. I think it's definitely for my position, so much of, I think so many of my conversations that I have with teams and with fellow staff and with individual scholar athletes is not planned. So it might just be, you know, specific teams coming to the fueling station after their weightlifting sessions, or it might just be, you know, having a conversation with the coach when they happen to be over at Spanos. And so many, you know, really meaningful interactions happen just on the fly by seeing people. And so I'm really excited just back on campus and be able to talk with, you know, all of the scholar athletes and the fellow staff again. I think in terms of the transition to Division One, not too much is really going to change from the support of the nutrition staff, because we've already been kind of practicing best practice of what we would want to be doing. So I don't think, you know, going from Division Two up to Division One would really change too much of that.
Well, we're out of time for today. Thank you so much for joining us, Jasmine.
Thank you. It was great talking with you.
Really enjoyed that conversation, Jenny, that you had with Jasmine. Interesting to me how she, I mean, first of all, I'm fascinated by food and learning a lot about nutrition, but interesting to me how she's able to put together a program and coordinate for so many scholar athletes with different palates, different interests, different competitive levels, and so on, and put something together and really tailor something that works for each individual.
Right. I mean, it's pretty incredible. 23 different teams with UC San Diego Athletics being able to really fit all of their needs. But I mean, like she said, there's just some common threads in nutrition as far as how to make a healthy plate and staying hydrated and all those different things that really apply to every single scholar athlete.
Absolutely. And we should note that if you want to check out some recipes and some best practices, fascinating stuff on Instagram, the handle is @Triton_nutrition. They put out new recipes each week. Jenny, you know, I thought it was very interesting as well towards the end when you asked about the transition to Division One and getting ready for the move. And her answer was a little bit surprising in that she said for her and her staff that not much is going to change. They're already operating on a Division One level. So for them, it's just keep doing what you're doing and try and build upon that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that was pretty surprising to me too. But I mean, when you think about it, they're really giving the top tier of quality of nutrition expertise that they can already. And so that's something that really won't change with Division One. I mean, the opponents will be different, the competitions will be different, but nutrition really is something that just stays the same.
And for some of us, a lot to learn for sure.
Oh yeah, definitely. Well, moving right along, in today's Campus Spotlight, we've got Dr. Sean Travers, who's the director of UC San Diego's LGBT Resource Center. Sean shares about how the center serves the LGBTQI+ community and how Pride will be celebrated virtually this year.
Dr. Sean Travers joining us in the Campus Spotlight on TritonCast. And tell us a little bit about the LGBT Resource Center and what services that provides.
Well, we were founded 21 years ago, so we've been on campus for a really long time. And what we do in a nutshell is we build community for LGBTQI+ people at UC San Diego. Of course, that includes our students, but it also includes our faculty and staff. And we have a lot of connection with alumni as well. And so the primary thrust of every day that we open up the center is, how are we going to build community? How are we going to make connections? How are we going to create a sense of family among those that identify as part of the LGBTQIA+ community at UC San Diego?
The LGBT Resource Center is one of six campus community centers at UC San Diego. How do you all work together and kind of pool resources and look to serve the greater good?
That's an interesting story, Jeff. We have been working together for a long time. The original center was the Cross-Cultural Center, followed by the Women's Center, and then the LGBT Resource Center. And the three of us very early on realized that working together works. and that we were better able to serve people from diverse intersecting identities when we worked really close together. The idea that if you walk into the LGBT Resource Center, you can walk in fully as all of who you are, not just being a part of who you are. You don't just walk in as a member of the LGBT community. You might also be a person of color. You might also identify as a woman. There might be all kinds of identities that really matter to you. And all of those are valued at all of our centers, including the Raza Resource Centro, the Black Resource Center, the Intertribal Resource Center, and Asian Pacific Islander, Middle Eastern, Deji American programs and services, that all of us really stay at the intersections of community and identity as a way of really trying to serve all of our constituents really well.
You talk about the importance of bringing people together and the centers working together, but at this time we're all apart due to the pandemic. So how has that kind of changed the center and the way you operate?
It is challenging. We were really lucky in some ways because our community had the fall and most of the winter to be connected, to get to know each other. And so in the very late winter and the spring, we were able to rely on existing connections and existing relationships. People knew each other. They had shared hugs. They had shared coffee. They had connected. And so in the spring, most everything was able to move virtually because, again, people had connections already. The trick this summer, and as we approach the fall, is how do we integrate incoming students, our transfer students and our first-year students, into community? And a particularly tricky part about the LGBTQIA+ community is you don't always have a strong sense that you're part of that community. When you enter UC San Diego, it might be part of your own journey of identity that you figure out, oh, you know, it's my junior year, but I am part of this community and it's time for me to engage. And how you engage in that community virtually, where you just can't walk into the center and strike up a random conversation with someone, but you have to be inside some kind of connection with some of the staff, some of the undergraduate interns that work for us, are participating in some of the organizations, because drop-in space in terms of broad community drop-in space does not translate well virtually. It just doesn't quite work. And so a big part of our summer is answering that question, how will we create community virtually, in particular for folks that have never been connected to UC San Diego's LGBTQIA+ community?
I think that's a question in integrating new students and faculty and staff members on campus. A lot of us are struggling with. I want to talk a little bit about Pride, and we know that June is Pride Month, but in the city of San Diego, it's celebrated in July, and here on campus, the campus is tied into the city of San Diego's celebration in July. Why is that?
We have always participated in San Diego Pride. In fact, before there was even a center, our faculty, staff, and students were organizing contingents in the parade, volunteering at the festival, and deeply connected to the broader San Diego community. The reason San Diego celebrates in July as opposed to June is California has a rich number of delightfully large cities, and we try not to compete with each other. So we don't all do the same Pride on the same weekend. In fact, the Pride season starts very early. It starts in March in Long Beach. That's the first Pride. And it runs all the way through November. And November is Palm Springs, and that is the last Pride. And there is usually some kind of Pride event in the state of California for that entire season. Now, it might be a small town event or a big town event. San Diego has had its Pride the weekend before Comic-Con, because Comic-Con is also a huge part of San Diego.
No question.
So we always have a Pride the weekend before Comic-Con. It's a great time to be in San Diego. And for anyone that's lived in San Diego for very long, you know, June is pretty gloomy. That June gloom is real. And, you know, when you want to be out and enjoying a parade and a festival, that bright and beautiful sunshine in July is usually just perfect. You know, it's what I think of as San Diego hot, which is, you know, maybe 80 degrees, which is awesome.
because of the pandemic, again, we're all kind of apart. So what will kind of virtual Pride look like in San Diego in July?
The beautiful thing is we had to run through with what they call World Pride. There are many, many cities in the world that celebrate Pride the last weekend in June, June 26th this year. And so they curated 24 hours of online programming to celebrate Pride in June. And it was a worldwide celebration. It started in the Pacific Islands and it went all the way around the world hour by hour. So it was really kind of beautiful. San Diego Pride was a part of that. And so we had submissions in that. And then for our city proper, it's going to be very similar. There will be a number of hours of programs of people who have submitted short snippets about their connection to Pride. And UC San Diego has done that. We have a 2-minute video that will be part of those hours. And I believe it's about a 3-hour broadcast. And so the parade typically is about 3 hours. And so I imagine folks will be logging in and watching that broadcast, and they'll see UC San Diego's part, as well as all of the other parts of our San Diego city that are connected to Pride. And so that's how we'll do that. Of course, Pride happens 365 days out of the year, but there'll be events starting the weekend before with our She Fest, which is a women's focused space. We have the Spirit of Stonewall rally, which will happen on Friday night, which is a political rally connected to Pride. And then there'll be all kinds of very specific community-based events to the week leading up to the day of what would be the parade, which will now be this virtual event.
And back here on campus, the LGBT Resource Center has partnered with athletics for quite a time, a long time now, to create events surrounding athletics contests. Can you tell us a little bit about that partnership and how that came about and how it's developed over time?
Well, I started at UC San Diego in 2001, and Earl Edwards was one of the first people that I connected with. And Earl saw and named the need for that connection to the LGBTQIA plus community really early on. In 2002, there was an out athlete, and he really led the way in being able to be fundamentally fully who you are as an LGBTQIA plus person and as an athlete. And since that first person in 2002, and of course he wasn't the first, he was the first one that I knew, we have had connections with athletes that are part of the community. And we've specifically worked with coaches, assistant coaches, and athletic trainers to give them the information they need to work well with our LGBTQIA plus community, whether it be gay, lesbian, and bisexual folks, and what it means for relationships that may develop on a team, or what it means for our transgender and non-binary community, and how they navigate the often gendered sports teams, how people give them respect via the pronouns that they prefer, which for many non-binary people is they and them in the singular, as opposed to he and him or she and her. And along with all that education and training, I've had the opportunity to be an honorary coach. And that's been some of my most fun work that we've done, where we have had what we will call out at the game. So when I am the honorary coach for a game, I will invite the LGBTQIA plus community to join me at those games to create our own little mini rooting section. We'll bring some pride flags and we'll cheer on our athletes. And I've done that for baseball. I've done that for softball, and those have been, I've done that for basketball. I've done that for both men and women's basketball. And that's been really fun. We've really enjoyed those out of the games. And once we're all back on campus and we're all competing again, I'm excited for us to again do out of the game and draw together our community in support of our athletes.
That's fantastic. And I know we can't all wait to be back on campus and together again soon. Sean Travers, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Jeff. I appreciate it.
Well, I really enjoyed your conversation with Dr. Travers. I mean, one of the things that stood out to me the most is how this pandemic has brought on so many challenges, and it's amazing that they're still going to be able to celebrate Pride virtually, even when we can't come together as a group this year.
Absolutely, Jenny. And how much goes into putting together those celebrations in other years when everything is in person and on site, but the amount of work that must go into that to put put things together virtually is something that I'm sure is vastly underappreciated. I was struck by the fact that there are 6 centers on campus, which we knew, but the fact how they collaborate with one another really to ensure that all UC San Diego students, faculty, and staff have a place to go, have a place to call home on campus. I thought that was really fascinating. So we truly appreciate Dr. Travers taking the time to join us here on Triton Cast. That's almost going to do it for episode number 2. We hope you will join us for episode 3 again. New episodes every Wednesday of Triton Cast. We got a fun one for you next week. We're going to be joined by ESPN Steve Quiss. Steve has been broadcasting UC San Diego basketball games for the last 4 years, and he's been broadcasting basketball and other sports on ESPN for about a decade now. So we'll go through Steve's background and how he got involved with the Tritons and what he's most looking forward to about our move to Division I. New episodes of Triton Cast premiere each Wednesday.
Thanks so much for listening today. If you enjoyed the show, make sure that you subscribe, rate, and review Triton Cast on the podcast platform of your choice. Also, give us a follow on Twitter at TritonCast and email any feedback you've got to TritonCast@ucsd.edu. Have a great rest of your day.
You've been listening to TritonCast. TritonCast is a production of UC San Diego Athletics Communications. Please subscribe, rate, and review this podcast on your platform of choice. If you have show questions or comments or suggestions for future guests, email us at TritonCast@ucsd.edu. You can also follow the show on Twitter @TritonCast.